There's a big focus on mental health in this edition of Voices of Montana as Governor Greg Gianforte stopped by. We put infrastructure on the agenda first. That transitioned into the potential that Montana's hospitals may be initiating crisis care brought on by the COVID-19 Delta variant. One silver lining regarding the pandemic was the promising advancements in telemedicine. And Drs. Eric Arzubi and Reza Gomi from Frontier Psychiatry were here to discuss the advantages and some challenges of telepsychiatry in improving mental health outcomes for rural Montana. It's the governor. How you doing, Greg?
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thank you
it's
for
great
being
to be
here.
Back in studio here.
Yeah, I know. It seems like it's been a long haul, doesn't it?
It has been.
Yeah.
But I'm confident. I was thrilled. I was first day of school. I was out in Frenchtown high-fiving all the elementary kids coming in. And you know what? They're back in the classroom. They chose not to have a mask mandate. And you know what those kids are doing? They're learning.
Yeah.
And it's great to see.
I'm with you 100% on that, and maybe that's something we'll talk about. I want to get right into this infrastructure needs, though, because I think the question is, and we have discussed it and delved into it here, the first wave for the ARPA funding infrastructure. There's some state funding going on here, too. 320 applications, $900 million. That was more money than is available. That's just the first wave. What does that say about where we're at with our infrastructure needs?
Well, we have to catch up, and honestly, it starts with a strong private sector. If we don't have a strong economy, there's no way to pay for any of this. But last week, I was really pleased to announce about $150 million of grants to local communities all over the state for water and sewer projects. And honestly, Montana's leading the nation in getting this money out. As I've said, if we're going to spend our grandkids' money, let's spend it in a way that our grandkids actually get some benefit. Yeah, so the bulk of these funds, 80% have gone into our rural communities. These are rebuilding water mains, sewer systems. The investments that we've been honestly kicking the can down the road on, we're able to fund about 75 of these 300 projects to help communities build a base that will allow people to come back home and thrive.
Critical infrastructure needs, too.
Yeah. We used a scoring system on these 320 proposals that basically said, there's got to be a critical need. This is not I want. This is I need. And we were looking for local communities to pony up and match some of the dollars. They got some ARPA dollars as well directly to these municipalities and communities. And if they were willing to put money on the table, we were willing to match it. So that bumped it up higher. And that's the way we went through it. It was a very rational and transparent process. And I was thrilled to get $150 million out last week so we can start building these projects.
A unique set of circumstances that makes this money available at this point.
You were going to say funny money, weren't you?
Well, you know, we talk about it. Yeah, our national debt is skyrocketing, and this is our grandkids' money. We want to make sure we spend it wisely. But as I said in the opening, what causes this? Budget priorities, communication issues, or just old infrastructure? How do we get so far behind?
Well, I just think Montana has not been living up to its full potential economically. Quality of life off the chart. But, you know, Tom, we've talked about this a lot. For decades, we've been exporting our kids. And as a result, the families don't get the benefit of being together. Our economy doesn't get the benefit of their economic contribution. But we're changing that. I promise the people of Montana, we're going to put new leadership in all these state agencies. We're get open back up for business, getting rid of these arbitrary mandates. And we've done that. And I'm pleased, you know, since we made the changes earlier this year, our unemployment in Montana is down 87%. We're back to within 1% of the labor participation that we were prior to the pandemic. Some of these new infections are concerning. But we've learned over this last year, mandates don't work. You know, the states that have mandates, their infections are going up. The states that don't have mandates, their infections are going up. There are precautions we need to take. We've made this vaccine available to everybody in the state that wants it free of charge as of April 1st. It's a personal choice. I chose to get the vaccine. I think it's the best way to protect my health and that of my family. I encourage other people to do it. But I think when presented with the facts, Montanans can make the right decision. And I'll just say to folks, 9 out of the 10 people we see going into the hospital right now have not been vaccinated. My opinion, and I would encourage people to talk to their doctor, they're safe and effective, but you have to make that own decision. In Montana, we're not going to mandate vaccine passports or vaccines or masks at a state level, but we're counting on people to be responsible for their own health and for their families.
Well, and we increased our resistance to COVID-19, but we've also now, because we're kind of back, we want to get back into it, we've increased our exposure. And so we are seeing numbers in our Montana hospitals where it's real challenging for our healthcare providers. You have enacted or initiated the National Guard to help out in circumstances. Crisis care is something we talked about briefly yesterday. A couple of hospitals are considering that. And briefly, what that is just protocols that go into place. And when we feel like there's not enough resources for standard level of care, Department of Health and Human Services have played a part in that.
Yeah, we updated those. It's important. We hope we don't have to enact them. We're very close to capacity in many hospitals. And to the extent we're working directly with the hospitals, when they need assistance, we're providing it. We have called up the National Guard. We also have contract nurses available that the federal government will pay for. We're also very encouraged by some of the therapeutics that are coming out, the monoclonal antibodies, which traditionally had to be delivered through an intravenous, are now available as a shot. And what this means is if someone's in a vulnerable category, elderly, underlying condition, person of color, one of the protocols that could be followed is if the doctor recommends it to get one of these monoclonal antibodies, and it prevents occupying an ICU bed generally. It prevents more severe cases. So we're going to be getting some guidance out to the hospitals on that. They've been underutilized, and I think we could do more there. So there are things we can do, but I'm also hopeful. We've seen a slowing in the new infections in the state of Montana. This last week, it dropped into the single digits. It had been in the 20% range week over week. We're now in the single digits. One data point does not make a trend, but we're watching it closely. But there's no reason to shut down the economy if people take reasonable precautions. And again, the vaccines, 9 out of 10 people going into the hospital right now have not been vaccinated. So it makes a difference.
I'm hopeful, as usual, a real positive, that we're getting over this. Again, I think a lot of this, of course, the Delta variant is much more infectious than the original COVID-19 virus. And we have increased our exposure an awful lot. But I'm hopeful and positive and thinking that we're going to start seeing us increase that immunity, or as Dr. Graham would say, don't call it herd immunity, call it herd protection. And I think that's a good thing. I want to move, before we move on from there, go back to infrastructure, because I can't help but talk about St. Mary's, Governor. I think we have a unique opportunity here, maybe once in a lifetime opportunity, to shore up this system. And it's $200 million, probably plus. At this point, we've been doing we being the federal government and state as much as they can, Band-Aid approaches for years and years. Where's that?
St. Mary's, I believe, right next to these water and sewer projects, St. Mary's is the most important infrastructure project we have in the state. It provides domestic water along much of the High Line. It irrigates over 100,000 acres, which is the only way we can get significant production up there. And it's long in the tooth. It's 100 years old. We had a failure last year. Fortunately, I was able to procure the money out of Washington to fix the failure. But there's 5 drops. We only fixed 2. The canal has not been rebuilt. The diversion needs to be done. So we're watching closely what happens in Washington with the infrastructure bill. But in our administration, this project's the priority.
Where are we going to get the funding for it? Where is it going to come from if it doesn't come from the federal government? Because that seems like it's a little bit of, I don't want to say gamble, but you don't know what's going to come out of that bill that might directly fund St. Mary's.
Yeah, the challenge, and this is probably more than you want to know, but when that project was originally done, 75% of the burden of maintenance was placed on the irrigators. Mm-hmm. And yet many municipalities get domestic water out of that system. They don't pay anything. Mm-hmm.
Recreation.
And many other Bureau of Reclamation projects have a 25% irrigator contribution, not a 75%. So I had introduced legislation. I think it's still the right thing to do. We ought to flip the funding formula to match the other Bureau of Reclamation projects. This was such an early project that the federal government was a little more greedy, and we need to put a little more fairness in there.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, our state's 25th governor, elected with more votes than any governor in Montana history, the largest margin for a first-term governor since 1920, and 34 years in the private sector. You mentioned some time in the House of Representatives there, and I know that you had made St. Mary's a priority there as well. Updating, as we have like a couple of minutes before this break, the water and the drought plan.
Yeah, and I know we have a lot of producers that are listening, farmers and ranchers. They've been hit hard.
Yeah.
And I was down in southeast Montana, Baker, Glendive, Weibo, talking to farmers this past week, you know, 20% crop yields. I was talking to a honeybee manufacturer down in Broadus, and normally they produce 2,100 barrels of honey every year. This year they're getting 64.
Wow.
So we can't survive many years like this. This is why we need to update our drought emergency plan. It hasn't been updated for 25 years, and we're not doing agriculture the same way. So it's time to change. So
go ahead.
I want to give a shout out because today is my wife's birthday.
Oh,
Susan's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Susan. She is always with me, and I just love her dearly. And happy birthday, Susan.
Ah, Susan, happy birthday, the first lady. So, taking her out to dinner, a little
Son, daughter, and son-in-law are coming into town tonight. So we'll have a little dinner tonight.
Great.
That'll be good.
I know she's an asset to the state of Montana, Greg. No doubt about that.
We all love her.
Yep. All right, happy birthday. I guess that I got to take a break upcoming here, so... Real quickly, if you've got 20 seconds, what does change in that supply, that water supply plan?
Well, we need to reflect what's happening on the ground right now. There have been new techniques in irrigation. We have to reflect the needs of the farmers and ranchers. And part, there's been new scientific work done, particularly Israel's done some interesting things. We ought to learn, adopt best practices, and make sure we have the right plan in case we get in this situation again.
More in a minute. Making new inroads in mental health in rural Montana. We'll talk about that a bit later on. Frontier Psychiatry, Dr. Eric Arzubi, co-founder of that, and Dr. Gami is going to be with us. So this is a bit later on. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte in studio. I'm Tom Schultz. It's From Montana for Montana and from the Northern News Network, Voices of Montana. Governor, again, thanks for being here. It's good to see you. It's good to see everybody out and getting out. And of course, obviously, we've talked about being careful out there. Let's move to telehealth as we're moving into that next. And not only telehealth, pardon me, but mental health. It's something that your administration has taken an active role in.
Well, they're actually linked. I mean, telehealth and mental health. I think this is one of the silver linings coming out of the pandemic that we were able to, both at a federal level and a state level, we were able to relax some of the restrictions on the delivery of medicine through telemeans. And Tom, I'm not sharing any new news here, but Montana's a rural state, and we don't have specialists in every community. And in particular, there's certain, especially with mental health, there's a certain apprehension about getting the care that you need. And when someone can get access to counseling, advice in the privacy of their home, and don't have to walk into a building that says, enter here for mental health services. I mean, that makes this care that they desperately need more accessible. And that's why the combination actually makes a lot of sense. And that's why I know you're going to be talking with Dr. Arzubi here in a little bit. He's really been a pioneer in this area. And this is what we need. We need more innovation in medicine to make sure we get more care. I'm going to be over later today. We're opening up a new addiction recovery facility here in Billings.
Oh.
Pretty excited about that.
What is that?
This is the Compass facility run by Alternatives. And this has been a real priority for us. And I think most people know this, but mental health and addiction are really two sides of the same coin. And you often, as I understand from the medical professionals I work with, you know, you have someone exhibiting symptoms. It's never quite clear which is the root cause. It could be a mental health issue, but it's often exacerbated by some form of addiction. They're both there. So we're going to be kicking that off later today. This has been a real priority for us because as we talk, I mean, this is the downside of it. As we talk to law enforcement, about almost 90% of the crime we see in the state is addiction related. And so what are the consequences of that? Well, it fills up our jails, but worse, it's busting families apart. It exposes the rest of the community to more violent crime. We have the second highest number of kids in foster care per capita in the entire country. And it means when someone's suffering from addiction, they're no longer a productive citizen. So they're not contributing in the community. In fact, they become, instead of a plus, they're a minus from a state services perspective. So there is so much good that can come from increasing access to mental health services, increasing access to addiction recovery services. And this is why we made the single largest new expenditure in our budget in the state of Montana is the Heart Fund, which I was proud to introduce and champion and sign into law. It creates a fund, $25 million a year, directed to community-based mental health and addiction recovery services. This is administered by the Department of Health and Human Services. We have to help every Montanan who is suffering with mental health or addiction overcome that so they can be all that God created them to be.
Do you think people, Governor, are understanding the connection, the front-end spending when it comes to mental services and the back-end savings when it comes to public health overall?
Well, this is part of its economics, but I would say the more important thing is these are people that are in desperate need of help, and they can't necessarily help themselves. So we need to come alongside them, and that's why this work is so important.
Got about a minute here. You've been out, thankfully, I think a lot of people have, and visiting some places in Montana. Talk about your travels.
Oh, you know, the happiest day of my administration so far has been the day that the legislature left town. I got to watch 150 sets of taillights leave Helena. And what that's meant is I'm typically there now on Mondays. I do my staff meetings, and then I travel the state the rest of the week. So in the last week, I've done events. I had a great opportunity to recognize a Gold Star family from World War II up in Kalispell this week. I did an event in Whitefish. Did an event yesterday at White Sulphur Springs and one in Harlow. Last week, I was in Weibo and Glendive and Terry and Fallon and Broadus and doing town halls and meeting with high school students and having dinners with university administration. And I just think I got to get out of the bubble in Helena.
Yeah.
And the bigger something gets, the farther you are from the truth. So I like to get out because I get some truth.
You get a sense that there's still a lot of optimism in Montana.
No question. And I'm an optimist. My glass is always half full. I think that Montana's not been living up to its full potential. I'm proud of what we did in the legislature. I ended up signing 550 bills into law. And I think our best days are ahead of us.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks for
having me on, Tom.
Yeah.
And happy birthday, Susan.
Happy birthday, Susan. We'll take a break. Dr. Eric Arzubi standing by. We move next to Frontier Psychiatry after these headlines from Brian Bennett. I sure appreciate catching up with the governor. Some good comments, some good thoughts there, and a good lead-in as we look to now mental health, and especially improving our mental health services in, well, the frontier. Rural Montana. Dr. Eric Arzubi now joins us in studio. On the phone is Dr. Gomi, his co-founder for Frontier Psychiatry. First off, Eric, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Thank you
really
for being here.
Really appreciate it.
And Dr. Gomi, thank you for being here too, sir. How are you?
Of course. Thank you. Very good. Thank you.
Great. Frontier Psychiatry. I'm just going to start off. We got like about 4 minutes in this segment. What is Frontier Psychiatry?
Sure. So, Frontier Psychiatry is a psychiatric practice that Dr. Gomi and I and Dr. Bob Seiss, we founded 2 years ago, and it's an all-virtual practice based in Montana and focused on Montana only. And and essentially, when I say it's an all virtual practice, we provide telehealth services to people in Montana at any point in the continuum of care. So it could be in the home, it could be in a clinic, in a hospital.
All virtual.
All virtual, yes, sir.
Yeah, Dr. Gomi, you just follow up on that, and maybe talk about some of the challenges or the opportunities about this all virtual practice.
Sure. You know, and we started this practice before COVID. So lo and behold, you know, once that happened, the door was even more open for virtual care. But really, we wanted to find a way to meet people anywhere they were in the state, not having them drive hours and hours or having to wait months to be seen. And so that was really the driving factor behind setting up this practice.
What are some of those challenges then? Because as I get right into it, I guess, and Dr. Arzuba, you can respond here first. All virtual. Are there times when you need to see a person face to face to move or get over perhaps a hump in their mental health care?
So that's a good question. Look, in the best of all worlds, would I love to see every single patient face to face? Likely, right? But then I need to think about the other things that impact this person's life, like how much time does it take to drive here? What's the cost of gas? Are they missing any school or are they missing work? Does that affect their family? Right. So there's kind of plus and minuses to seeing someone in person. And what's nice is, and again, we're trying to make this patient centered, right? So we need to think about what's best for that patient, not what's convenient for me, Dr. Arzuba, what's best for the patient. And I think we're trying to do that. And there's plenty of research to show that doing this over video has great outcomes and is actually not, according to the research, is not less effective compared to in-person care.
You two have sort of different specialties, child and adolescence and adult psychiatry. And then Dr. Gomi, more of a neuropsychiatrist. From that perspective, talk about frontier medicine. Talk about frontier psychiatry.
Sure. You know, and this is a question that comes up absolutely because I practice a mix of psychiatry and neurology. And by neuropsychiatry, what that refers to is taking care of people, in my case, that have neurodegeneration or dementia, if you will. So that can be movement disorders like Parkinson's disease. That can be cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease. And in those cases, what's very interesting is even going back now over 10 years, there have been some front runners in the field that have done the research to show that even for Parkinson's disease, the all virtual care model is not inferior to regular care, that patients do just as well and can be managed just as well, which for me was kind of, you know, earth shattering at first because I thought, man, I spend so much time doing a physical exam, you know, in the clinic, but it turned out enough of it can be approximated that the outcomes are not affected. So in my case, sure, there are challenges, you know, in nursing homes, in places where patients are hard of hearing. There's certainly some things we have to work around. But to date, we've been able to find workarounds many times with the help of just wonderful staff, family, caregivers that step up to kind of fill in those gaps.
I'll talk more about the effectiveness of that. I had to kind of comment or think to myself, Dr. Gomi, as you said, that it's relatively even across the board in terms of care and outcomes. For me, that was surprising. For you, that's earth-shattering. We'll explore that a little more as we come on back. It is Dr. Arzuba and Dr. Gomi here on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. Rural healthcare is different than urban healthcare. It just is. If we live in Montana, I think we understand that. There are new inroads, and part of that is, as some have said, even the governor who was just here, the silver lining behind the pandemic is that we're learning to communicate in new ways. We are here talking about that today as it relates to mental health. Tom Schultz back here from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana, specifically Frontier Psychiatry, created in 2019. A couple of guys who co-founded that, and you can tell they're passionate about this, but it's about getting to those underserved or overlooked, or even as it says here, Dr. Eric Arzuba, who's with us in studio, Dr. Reza Gomi, who co-founder on the phone here, overcharged as well. I mean, there are so many elements that come into play when you look at the need and feeling the need. Thank you guys both for being here. So Frontier Psychiatry, I want to, go back to this comparative care. And I think there was a point to be made there when you look at in-person care versus telehealth. I think when we see it in maybe more conventional areas of healthcare, a doctor is not going to be able to set a broken arm over the computer. But what can be achieved? How far ahead or along can you move the ball when it comes to mental health care?
So very far. And again, this is what research and experience, you know, really, and, you know, Dr. Gomi and I, we've been doing this together for a couple of years and have worked with thousands upon thousands of Montanans in the last couple of years. And we've seen the success stories. And so, you know, the other thing, you know, the other point sort of in a related matter I wanted to make was instead of comparing, what I would invite us to do is instead of comparing sort of telepsychiatry care versus in-person care is let's compare it to someone who has access to no care at all. Oh. Right. So I think, you know, certainly the research shows that you can get similar outcomes if you do virtual care versus in-person care. But I would encourage us to think about what if there's someone, let's say in Ekalaka or northwestern Montana, Libby has no access to care. Are we going to start debating whether or not do we do in-person and wait 3 months or do we do virtual and see someone tomorrow? And I would argue if somebody's suffering, they're going to want to see someone tomorrow. And sure enough, we've seen the benefits of that.
Dr. Gomi, can you describe some of those benefits? This program began in 2019. You both have a lot of pedigrees here, and I wish I had time to read them. I'm impressed by the work that you guys do, and thank you for that. Give us some of these examples of how you have seen the effectiveness of telepsychiatry.
Sure. You know, we have some great examples. You know, just thinking about specific cases, part of what we're doing is we're live in any setting a patient would need us, whether that's at home, in jail, in the prison, in the nursing home, in the emergency room. We have 13 emergency rooms live, 24/7 coverage right now, and that list is growing very quickly. And some great examples are ones that include someone coming in intoxicated or withdrawing from, let's say, alcohol or methamphetamine or opiates. You know, that's someone who has a small window of opportunity. And typically, and unfortunately the case is in most emergency rooms, they do not have access to medication-assisted treatment and getting enrolled in care right then and there. You know, often they have to be sent home because of lack of access. Mm-hmm. And so we've had cases now where someone comes in, we have that window, we start medication-assisted treatment and enroll them in our full program right then and there, whether it's 2 a.m. or, you know, just in the middle of the day. And we're following up with that patient, finding them sober 30 days later. We follow them within 7 days and following them, but they remain sober, working full time, getting back custody with their kids. I mean, accomplishing these goals. That's been incredibly rewarding. So those are great examples of where there was no access to care. And not only now is there access, but people are just, I mean, able to flourish when they do have that support.
One of the things I wanted to highlight as well is, you know, some of the work we're doing right now in hospitals, we're incredibly lucky to have we have a joint venture with the Montana Hospital Association. So that joint venture is focused on providing emergency and urgent care, psychiatric care across the state. So right now we're working with 14 hospitals where we are providing emergency psychiatric care within 2 hours of being called at these 14 emergency rooms. And our hope is, I mean, our vision, the mission of our practice is to make psychiatric care available to all Montanans by 2025. And that's what's driving us every day. And so this joint venture in particular, and, you know, I take the opportunity to say thank you to the Montana Hospital Association for this opportunity. I think this is going to really help us a lot. The other thing, what we're trying to do, again, we see not only health benefits, but also this has a ripple effect, as Dr. Gomi was alluding to, and I think and the governor was mentioning, is this has ripple effects also into the economy, mm-hmm. right? So 50% of the entire population will at some point meet criteria for mental health disorder. And so if you're an employer and you have a big group of employees, at any one point, a percentage of those employees are struggling with something, with either substance use disorder, anxiety disorder, depressive disorder. So you know, if you want to, there are two ways you can come at this. If one, you can come at this as sort of as a fellow human, you want to relieve suffering. But at the other side, if you want to come at this from someone who's looking at this, you know, the economy and making sure we need a good economy to flourish, well, people need to be in a good place to work hard. And if they're struggling with anxiety, depression, they're not sleeping, they're using substances, they're not going to be at their potential, which has a ripple effect on their family and on the economy. So, you know, this is a pretty big issue that, anyway, I hope we're playing a small part in addressing.
And I do want to come back to that economic component here, too. Dr. Eric Arzubi is with us, co-founder, along with Dr. Reza Ghomi of Frontier Psychiatry. Dr. Arzubi served as chair of psychiatry at Billings Clinic from 2014 to 2019. Also awarded the Montana Medical Association award, the Dr. Jack McMahon Service to Montana Physicians Award, for those contributions. And Dr. Ghomi, equally qualified for this clinical work. He's the author of over 30 peer-reviewed articles and book chapters, and also has an employee of Brain Check, which he uses in his own clinical practice. Again, thank you both for being here. Dr. Ghomi, so how does this work? It's not just like an emergency phone call situation, and you're talking me down from my crisis. Okay, thanks. Maybe I'll call you later. How does Frontier Psychiatry, telepsychiatry work?
You know, and depending on the setting, we have a few different options here. So we may be seeing people at home who are seeing us for a more routine or less urgent outpatient care. You know, our wait times to get into outpatient care are often less than 1 to 2 weeks. So our turnaround is very quick there. You know, you could be seeing us in a setting such as a nursing home or an otherwise residential facility, even such as a jail or a prison. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, we're rounding on these people. and that's a term we use in medicine when we say we're checking on them as requested by the staff or the patient and adjusting their medications or treatment plan. And then the other thing, as we become more urgent, is being seen in the emergency room. And that's the case where we've been doing a lot of work to keep that patient engaged. So we're seeing them right then and there in the emergency room, and then we have a very close follow-up plan, because the average right now is a patient leaves the emergency room and they may have access to a behavioral health provider, and that may be 3-4+ months out. We're seeing patients within 3 to 7 days after discharge, much more likely to keep them engaged. Our follow-up rates have been very high. We've also been reducing admission rates. So our goal is to keep people in their communities at home. And so we've been cutting admission rates in some of our hospitals by as much as 60% or more. So that's opening up beds for people that really need it, reducing wait times for beds, and then also, you know, accomplishing what patients want, which is to stay home, stay close to home. And so that's been incredibly a big privilege for us to do.
Eric, it seems like this continuum of care is also another benefit to this.
Indeed. So, you know, as Dr. Ghomi described, the concept is we're trying to create one great team of psychiatric providers, including psychiatrists as well as psychiatric nurse practitioners. And if we have one great team, we feel, who are willing to do the right thing, right? Because you can't just pick any sort of psychiatrist or any sort of nurse practitioner to do this work. We need to create a great team that is willing to do what we need to do to take care of the patients and think patients first, always patients first. If we have that team, well, our goal is to make it as easy as possible to access our team. I don't care where they are. Are they in the clinic? So in terms of your continuum, the continuum could be all the way from a primary care, a primary care office, all the way to the emergency room and even in a psychiatric hospital. So we're available across the continuum. Our goal and our job is to make that easy to do.
Dr. Ghomi, does telepsychiatry help or at times hinder the, getting over the stigmatism that sometimes come with mental health care?
You know, I think it can only help in that it's increasing access, and with increased access increases the conversation, the awareness. And it makes, when you lower that barrier, all of a sudden people are just more willing to have the discussion. You know, someone's wanting to see someone, that moment may come and go. And if they're waiting 3-4 months, they might change their mind. You know, certain things can happen in the environment. If we're available right when they need them, we're just much more likely to engage that person. And I think just show them, hey, there's nothing to be worried about here. There doesn't need to be that stigma. And I think we've seen culturally across the country and within Montana, you know, the needle's moving in the right direction. You know, we're able to recognize that talking about mental health care, talking about medication, talking about therapy, really nothing to be ashamed about, nothing to even think twice about in most cases. It's just something, a part of life that we need.
So I stand by. It's Frontier Care or frontier.care for more information. We're back with more with Dr. Gomi and Dr. Arzubi here of Frontier Psychiatry on Voices.
For over 60 years, Western Ranch Supply has been the trusted name for outstanding product selection and customer service. From animal health products, livestock handling equipment, and saddles and tack, to clothing, home decor, and pet supplies, we have it all at Western Ranch Supply. Like us on Facebook and sign up for our newsletter to receive the latest sales and promotions. Visit our stores in Billings or Great Falls or shop online at WesternRanchSupply.com. Western Ranch Supply, trusted by generations.
Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
That's a shout out to my best friend, to my lifelong partner. Boy, I'm going to tear up. Marrying Loey was the best thing that ever happened to me. So the best decision ever made. So thank you, Loey, my dear. I love you and happy anniversary. We're back talking about not a connected transition here. Mental health. Dr. Eric Arzubi is in studio. And Dr. Reza Gomi is on the phone here. Co-founders of Frontier Psychiatry, just new inroads in telepsychiatry. And I and thank you guys for being here. We only have like about 3 minutes in this segment. I want to talk about the economics behind it because you had a chance to chat with the governor. His administration sees it and buys into it. You look at the front end spending when it comes to mental health services and the back end savings, and it's becoming more and more apparent that it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So again, I'm really, really happy with the governor's comments because, you know, he looked at this in two ways, which I think is absolutely appropriate. And I think not enough of us in the mental health field do this. And that is, he said, you know, on the one hand, and the most importantly, obviously, is we're helping people. We're helping people in distress. Yeah. We're struggling and we're trying to avoid crises. At the same time, you know, and I know Dr. Gomi and I and Dr. Seiss, who, you know, are three partners. You know, we created this as a private practice. This is not a nonprofit. We created this as a practice because we wanted to focus on see if we can create value for the patients, create value for the community, and create value for the healthcare system. And if we do a good job, we'll be sustainable. We'll continue to flourish, and we'll all do well. If we don't do a good job, we'll fail, and that's okay. But I think, what we need to do is we need to be able to really do a good job with the resources we have. So keep overhead low. Be efficient, make sure processes are going well. And if we do that, patients will have a great experience. We'll have employees who are happy and feel like they're taken care of, and everybody wins. And so I think we need to do a better job in mental health is really expressing that we need to be great custodians of resources. And if we invest appropriately up front, we will create value down the road. And what do I mean by that, right? Like I was saying before, people who struggle with anxiety, depression, substance use disorders, they have a hard time keeping a job sometimes, in severe cases in particular. Or even if they go to work, they're distracted because they're super anxious or they have other things on their mind. So it can only help if we're focused sort of on the economy and a family able to provide for themselves, it will only help. This is going to create value.
Dr. Gomi, your perspective on that, on the public and the private partnership when it comes to telepsychiatry.
You know, I very much agree with Dr. Arzubi in that what we're finding is we're poised with our setup the way it is to move quickly. We're very agile. We can respond to new requests and demands very quickly. We're not necessarily reliant, for example, on a grant funding, which might have a multi-year, you know, horizon, long process. Certainly, we do use those, and they're very helpful. But the idea of tying in patient outcomes to how we, you know, are reimbursed and making sure we're doing right by patients, that's what we wanted to fundamentally be our driver, not necessarily metrics that are a little more divorced from how the actual patient is doing. So we're tracking those things like, you know, is the patient back to work? You know, are they receiving their refills on time? Are their medications? Are they, you know, going to therapy? Do they feel better? And so that's the kind of system we wanted to build and be able to track in order to, you know, do right by patients.
And sorry, Tom, if I may, and the other thing, again, I think we in healthcare, again, because psychiatrists were physicians, us in healthcare, we need to do better in terms of customer service. I mean, yeah, we can call it patient. I mean, we need to be patient-centered and make sure that our patient, the customer, is treated well and we respond quickly.
I think everything needs to also include, that front-end experience for the consumer. That's Dr. Eric Arzoubi and Dr. Reza Ghomi. Thank you, guys. I look forward to continuing this discussion. Frontier.care for more information.